Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Sestrino getting you ready for our 13 Archetypes of Survivor podcast with AJ Mass and RHAP tradition, unlike no other. And so we will be talking with AJ Mass here on the podcast. Very excited to be headed into New York for our next live show, which is going to be on the night of Wednesday the 8th, which is going to be 1 week from today when I am recording this. If you want to come out there and be there with us in person, this is going to be our biggest show yet. We're going to be at the AMC Lincoln Square 13. It's going to be the biggest venue that we've ever done one of these live events. We have tickets still available if you want to be there with us in person. Over 500 people are coming already. If you want to be part of the fun, go to robhasawebsite.com/S35KIA or visit the events page on robhasawebsite.com and find out about our upcoming event in Austin, Texas. That's at robhasawebsite.com/S35KIA or go to robhasawebsite.com/events for everything we're doing this fall. Here's AJ Mass. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to bring in our guest today on the podcast that he and I have been going through and doing this exercise for almost as long as Rob as a podcast has existed at this point. Let's welcome in great friend of the podcast from ESPN and also the author of the How Fantasy Sports Explains the World and Yes, It's Hot in Here books. Please welcome the great AJ Mass. AJ, how are you?
I'm doing great, Rob. I am very excited to be here. I don't know if I'm a hero, if I'm a healer, if I'm a hustler. I'm not a hustler. So
you're probably more of a hustler than a healer, right?
Well, this is true. I faint at the sight of blood, so that's out.
Yes.
Speaking of fainting, whoa, previews. But anyway, it's good to be here. I'm excited about this season. I'm looking forward to this discussion with you as always. I'm just glad that I don't have to ask you any trivia questions of any sort on this podcast. We're just going to discuss about things that we both know a little bit about.
Yes, of course. AJ is the host of the Beat My Guest Trivia podcast and was so kind as to come on and host a Seinfeld trivia challenge between Akiva Whitaker and myself, which was a real pillow fight. Nobody really was making too much progress one way or the other about that. But we're here to talk about, of course, the archetypes, which AJ developed in his book, How Fantasy Sports Explains the World. And really, we have been doing this now for this is, I think, when did we start the first time? Was that South Pacific? And then now this is like the 13th time that we're doing this.
It's something. And you throw in all the Big Brother ones that we've done on top of it, and we're probably at around 17 or 18. It's been a while.
Yes. Yes. And,
but it's a labor of love.
Yes. And that we did miss the Big Brother Final 13 this past summer. So I do apologize about that. So the AJ Mass Nation is thirsty right now.
They are thirsty. Well, you know, we were all set to do it. And then, I was called into the den of temptation.
No.
And I just couldn't resist. That green elixir just looks so tasty. Unfortunately, it was full of meatballs and just knocked me out. So, there was nothing I could do yet.
All right. So depending on when you're listening to this in the podcast schedule, it bears noting we are recording this on Wednesday, November 1st. There is a 6th episode of Survivor that is airing tonight. We have not seen it. We are talking about everything that is going to be in this podcast through 5 episodes and the Rourke boot. That is all we have to work with right now.
Yeah, and I'm so disappointed about the Rourke boot. I had all my Fantasy Island jokes lined up, and now they're just gone by the wayside.
All right. AJ, in case we have a new listener who is checking out this podcast for the first time, can you explain this exercise that we're going to do?
Sure. The very shorthand version of this, basically, I came up with this archetypes to describe any group of people who are put together to perform a task, whether it be owners of a fantasy football league, which was more relevant to my book, or, you know, just people in a boardroom, a group of friends. You find that people tend, when they're restricted to a certain number of people, to fall into these specific roles. And when we can translate this to a show like Survivor, when we get down to 13 people, these 13 people will fit into these roles naturally. It's just something that people see a vacuum and they kind of just go into it. Once someone gets booted, you know, the dynamics change and some roles disappear and others move into other roles. But at this moment in time, when there are 13 left, it's the perfect number to explore where people's innate personalities map out to these archetypes, because people with certain archetypes and who are fulfilling certain roles have a better chance of winning the game. It doesn't mean that people who are in the weaker archetypes can't win. It just means that they have better odds, sort of like seeding the NCAA tournament. You know, the number one seed has a better shot to win, but there are upsets all the time.
Is it something that is, you know, extremely predictive of explaining the outcome of the season? Probably not, but
I think not.
but look, we're here to have fun on a podcast and, you know, talk about the archetypes, okay?
Yeah, exactly. It's a fun exercise. I think
don't
a
take
lot
it too seriously,
it.
People.
Look, the number one seed has been booted in the very next episode. The number 13 seed has won. It happens. It's all good. And it doesn't mean that I don't like any of these players. So, you know, some of my favorite players have bad archetypes. I think that was in the title of a lost episode or something.
Right. Okay. So, look, just because you have an archetype that you don't like, or you are going to make a mistake on Survivor, doesn't mean we don't like you. Okay, that's just always remember that.
Look, you know, I gave Jeremy Collins the narcissist once, and he explained to
pissed.
Me how he got very upset with it until I pointed out that you're really talking about yourself on my Twitter feed, and then he backed off. So I love Jeremy. It was all good fun.
He's great. And also, is that the season that he won also?
Of course.
Yeah, so
these guys are so dumb.
Yes, I am.
Yeah. All right, AJ. So let's start off with your lowest ranked archetype. That is always the fresh meat, always easier to figure out in the new player seasons than the seasons with the returning vets.
Yeah, I think when you start a season, there's usually several fresh meat candidates, and a lot of them tend to go by the wayside early, so that, you know, you see a fresh meat. I think Simone was definitely a fresh meat candidate, but, you know, she's gone, so, you know, can't fit the role now. I would say fresh meat isn't always someone who has no brains in their head by any stretch of the imagination. It's just someone who doesn't seem to understand Survivor and the point of the game. So in terms of this season, I mean, there's one person who really jumped out to me as someone who, especially over the past couple of episodes, doesn't seem to get the point of the game is to not just be an open book and tell everybody of all the secrets, you know, and, you know, doesn't keep any information to himself, alienates all of his alliance mates, and really has just been a complete dud in terms of understanding Survivor.
Oh, boy, AJ, what an opening salvo here. Are you going for Cole?
I am going for Cole.
Oh,
I just think that everybody else there seems to me, from what we haven't seen a lot of everybody, obviously, because of which tribes have been going to tribal council a lot. But Cole's gameplay seems to be someone who has just no concept of the game he is playing. It's just not working for me at all. There is no one else on this cast who I think better fits the role of someone who is clueless as to their situation than him.
Hmm. Yeah. So fresh meat is a person that doesn't really know the show. You know, I would not off the top of my head have gone with Cole for the fresh meat person. But that being said, you know, I do think it speaks to this cast that, you know, it has to be somebody. And of the 13 people left, I guess he's one of the people that knows the show the worst out of the group that's left.
Yeah, and you know, it's always relative. You know, it's always a situation where if you have a cast full of, you know, in the kingdom of the blind, the one-eyed man is king, as the mm-hmm. as the saying goes. You know, we didn't do this this past season of Big Brother, but I would have been hard pressed to find anyone who didn't fit Fresh Meat.
Yeah, it goes both ways.
Yeah, so you know, like you know, Raven would have been an idiot savant, but you mm-hmm. know, that we all know that because she thought she was the one-eyed man who was king. But yeah, I just think in this season, there's been very few people who've done things that are stupid, mm-hmm. And he's done a lot of stupid.
Yeah, this could have been Patrick also.
He's gone.
Yeah,
yeah. There were a lot of people who were fresh meat. They actually did a really good job of sussing out who the fresh meat were and got rid of them. And this is why I think this season is working so well, is because there's always an extraneous number of fresh meat performers, and this cast is really wants to play the game, and it's been very entertaining as a result.
Okay, AJ. Number 12 on your list of power rankings by archetype is the ninja. That's the person who is that if you were going to go through the list of the show of the cast, this would be the one person like, oh, I know there's one more. Okay. I said this person. Oh, wait, who is it?
Yeah. And, you know, it, because the Soko tribe was Soko good at the beginning, you know, we didn't see a lot of the interactions on the Soko tribe. So really, this could have gone to, you know, we had the situation a few years back when, you know, we hadn't seen that one tribe and, you know, the winner of the whole season ended up being the person I put as fresh meat because we hadn't seen any of the tribe.
Well, last season, the person that you had as the ninja was Officer Sarah.
Yeah, absolutely. And in a season with all those big personalities, she was someone we hadn't seen going into the game. And she really
emerge,
played
after the merge. She come out of hiding at that point.
Right. Exactly. The person can win the game. And like I said, these are just seedings. It's really hard to do that. Again, returning player seasons are much different. But so the Soko tribe for me, because we hadn't seen a lot. I mean, this could have been and probably would have been Rourke, who maybe had like one or two confessionals before the last episode. And I was all set to put her here. But of course, she's gone now. So we're left with really Desi and Jessica, both of whom I probably couldn't have named before last week either. Mm-hmm. They just weren't getting a lot of screen time. Between the two, you could argue this either way, but I'm going to go with Desi. I think the only reason that we saw Desi in the last episode is really because she was sitting next to Joe and Joe kind of dragged her into the shenanigans there. She wouldn't have been involved in any of that on her own. You know, I think she's a pawn right now in Joe's game. I mean, certainly she can get out of that situation, and I hope she does. I think she probably is a good player, but I really don't know anything about her in terms of Survivor right now because she hasn't gotten a lot of screen time except as Joe's, you know, kind of number two there.
No, I think that's very fair. I think that if you were going to rank the 13 cast members and by confessional count, I think if she's not bottom 13 out of 13, you know, she's at least, you know, in the bottom, you know, two or three.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what it was. I honestly really Jessica and Desi, if you had, you know, I even looked at my list this morning that I had done and I was like, wait, which one is which again? Yeah. It's hard for me to really put a face to the name for those two. They've been kind of invisible. And that's kind of what the, you know, the ninja is. I mean, if you want to put parentheses Purple Kelly, that's kind of the same sort of archetype there.
But to me, Jessica, I think, has had a lot more story in the show than Desi has to this point, because she's been involved with the Cole showmance and then also that she found the advantage that she had to send to the other group. So she's had a couple of things so far through five episodes, where Desi really only had that one episode where she went to tribal council with Joe and they had to, you know, decide what to do with the vote and try to, you know, ask Joe to play the hidden immunity idol for her. So she hasn't had nearly as much to do, I feel like, on the show than Jessica.
No, I agree. I think for me, the issue with remembering Jessica's name is just simply because she looks like so many other contestants in the past. I don't really have a feel for anything that makes her unique for this season. She's just kind of like, okay, yeah, I've seen this person before. And I just, the name just doesn't stick for me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, had Soko been to a couple of tribals then at the beginning, then perhaps.
Okay. AJ, number 11 is the cheerleader, the person who is rooting for the group. Last season, it was Andrea. Do you have a cheerleader in this group of 13?
I do have a cheerleader, and we were just talking about her. I still think it's Jessica. I think Jessica was definitely actually a cheerleader, like rooting on Soko for all the challenges that they won. She seems to have had a good relationship with all of her tribe mates and been able to kind of, you know, avoid any situations there. You know, she could have raised a stink when Cole kind of blabbed about, you know, what her power was, and she didn't. She still tried to keep the tribe together. I think that's kind of where I'm looking there in terms of that. Even in her new situation, now that they're on New Yawa, I think she's continued to be rooting for the tribe and trying to, in competitions, you know, you always hear her, go guys, go, let's go, let's go. And I think that's kind of where the cheerleader sits here. There, you know, the cheerleader is often a motherly type, and I don't think either of the two players this season who kind of more traditionally fit that role, you know, looking at them physically, I don't think either of them have that, you know, motherly, affectionate feel in the game. You know, Chrissy would be the person you would assume would be that kind of character, but she is much more acerbic and antagonistic than you'd expect. And Lauren simply doesn't want anything to do with the tribe. So she's certainly not a cheerleader.
Yeah. The interesting thing about Jessica is that she has been, you know, very optimistic and, you know, supportive of everybody in sort of like the camp life. But it seems like that at times that she has been down in terms of her confessionals. So I think that that is a good trait for the cheerleader to sort of like show like the happy disposition to the rest of the group when you're with them, but save the breakdowns for the producers in the confessional.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, the cheerleader's best asset is their social game and their ability to hide any potential cleverness and strategy skills that they have, so that they're kind of like dragged along and saying, well, they can't beat us in the end. You know, they're nice and they're not going to turn on us. And I think the loyalty aspect of that is something you have to emphasize, and don't reveal yourself to be a strategist. You know, if you happen to be one, great. Then, you know, this low ranking is going to shoot you way up.
AJ, number 10 is the loose cannon. Last season, Debbie, one of the all-time great loose cannons,
absolutely,
was there. Is there anybody that can even hold a candle to the great loose cannon that was Debbie Wanner?
You know, Debbie was such a loose cannon. I don't even think Debbie knew what she was going to do from moment to moment. And then that was just perfection there. You know, the loose cannon is definitely the character. It is always a fun character. I always think the loose cannon is great TV, and in some cases is a great person initials TV.
Yes.
But yeah, I think we've seen Tony Blockos 2.0 this year. Joe is by far the loose cannon. Just his gameplay. You know, it could have been Alan Ball had he stuck around, because anyone who's going to just, you know, attack people and for no apparent reason and create conflict where there is none and none is needed certainly is a candidate. But as he has been booted, Joe is clearly the loose cannon here. Just his gameplay is not by the book. It's by his own book. And really, I have no idea what he's going to do from moment to moment. I'm sure the players in the game have no idea either. And that makes him, quite frankly, a loose cannon.
I read your face. Thank you, baby girl.
You know, I'm surprised to see Joe in the list here at number 10 in the loose cannon, because I feel like that there are other spots that he could have potentially fit into down the road, a.k.a. The Mad Scientist, Captain Loophole even. So I think it certainly does fit in terms of he is a loose cannon, but I'm interested to see if, you know, who's going to fill in those other spots.
Yeah, I was kind of disappointed that Alan was eliminated, because I believe you could have found the soundbite where someone actually called him a loose cannon in one of their confessionals. And I was like, oh, awesome. They're doing this for me now. I love you guys, Survivor.
Yeah, that would be perfect if they could just like have it on the bottom third of the screen and label them.
Absolutely. Someone sent me a clip from the past season of Survivor Australia, which I haven't gotten around to watching yet. And it was one of the tribals early on. It's like, well, then a marriage of convenience. Mm-hmm. I was like, awesome. Keep it going.
Yes. Did they out the beta and the alpha in the marriage of convenience?
I don't think they went that far, but I was nevertheless, I was honored.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll see ultimately how Joe is going to be able to move forward after that, you know, really explosive tribal that he had, whether or not he goes to another tribal before the swap or if he ends up being a target at the merge because of that. Let's talk about the famous narcissist. We mentioned Jeremy Collins, a one-time narcissist. Ozzy was the narcissist last season. That one seems to have been the better long-term fit, right?
Yeah, I think he's probably been the narcissist every single season he's been on. You know, the narcissist is...
Well, he did play with Coach that one time.
This is very true. Well, Coach was the Dragon Slayer. I had to create a whole new archetype for that. No, you know, the narcissist is someone who thinks they're the bee's knees, as it were. They don't think they can do any wrong. They're usually a young, very physically fit person. It tends to be the alpha male on these tribes early on, especially for competitions. They're usually an easy boot after the merge when you no longer need to remain strong as a tribe so much as get rid of the threats. So that's kind of where the narcissist sits in this game. Someone whose biggest threat is physicality rather than, you know, social game or strategy.
And things like that?
And things like that, yeah.
Yes. Okay. JP is the narcissist?
JP is indeed the narcissist. You nailed it.
Yes. Okay. I can see it.
Yeah, I mean, even the people on his tribe are pointing out his eye candiness. So,
yeah,
makes that pretty darn easy. Yeah, yeah. And he's been a bit of a ninja the last few episodes, I will say. I can understand if people, you know, thought perhaps he was going to be the ninja. But these are puzzle pieces. They kind of only fit in one or two ways. So, but I could certainly understand that JP has been very, very invisible from the game for the last few episodes. But I'm sure once he makes the merge, assuming that, you know, their tribe doesn't go to any tribals between now and then, he's an easy first boot.
Mm-hmm. Do you get the sense that he is super into himself?
I don't necessarily, but, you know, in terms of the three candidates for this, I mean, you know, him, Devin, and Cole are kind of the three that have that kind of look to them, physicality. Devin is a bit more of a dude bro, though, so mm-hmm. Yeah, a little bit more self-deprecating. And the fact that he was willing to talk to you know, the nerd, that's usually not what you get out of the narcissist. The narcissist is usually looking for a showmance or you know, is very, very happy to just, you know, have the women stare at him. And I don't see any strategy from JP.
Yeah, we don't have that classic Nick Majorano narcissist in this cast.
Exactly, exactly. And even when Jeremy was the narcissist, it was more because he was self-anointing himself like the champion way early in the game. I think it was more that kind of a I'm the best. Listen to me. I've got this game on lockdown, mm-hmm. Which, you know, because he, you know, when you're a returning player, it's a lot easier to have that kind of confidence. Jeremy 1.0 was certainly not that.
Maybe it's because he's a Patriots fan, AJ, that's just sort of like inherent.
Yeah. You know, we don't need a backup quarterback. Let's just trade everybody away. Tom Brady's the best, right? Yeah, exactly.
All right. AJ, number eight is old reliable, the one person that you can count on, that, you know, they're never going to flip against you. Troyzan was that last season for you. I do think that the season sort of bore that out. Do you have an old reliable on the board?
Yeah, you know, the old reliable generally is someone, it's a what you see is what you get. There's nothing sneaky and underhanded here. You know, certainly, you know, an old reliable can flip, but it's usually going to flip with a couple of people after a long thoughts about it. In the challenges, probably always going to be a second and third place finisher. You know, you know they're going to be competitive. They're going to try. They may not win, but they're always going to be, you know, that kind of steady performer. And for some reason, in the annals of Survivor history, it's usually someone with a cowboy hat or some sort of, you know, a gruff rancher. Or, you know, there's usually this kind of bearded older male figure who fits into this. You know, in this season, it's clearly it's Ben. It's a perfect for Theodore Reliable. You know what you're going to get for him. You know he's going to be loyal. You know you can thank him for your service, for his service, and it's that kind of reliability that you can get from Ben.
Yeah, is that a Curb reference, AJ?
Could be.
Did you see it this week?
I did. Yeah. Oh, you know, by the way, I have to say, my Halloween was last night as we're recording this, and went to my friend's house. Our families are real close, and his next door neighbor, their family's next door neighbor, is a guy who, without even trying, is JB Smoove from Curb. Like, it just every time, it just rang the doorbell, came on, and is like, he had on the do-rag and everything. Where's the food?
Yeah,
it's amazing. It's uncanny. I love Leon.
We'll do the archetypes for Curb Enthusiasm at some point down the road.
Fair enough, indeed. But Ben is totally the old reliable.
All right, AJ, you mentioned the marriage of convenience in Australian Survivor and in U.S. I think this is a pretty good old reliable in Australian Survivor too. I think if you did the 27 archetypes, I think they would map out well for Australian Survivor. But AJ, the marriage of convenience is in two parts. There is an alpha and there is a beta.
Yes, and these are two people. Sometimes it's a showmance. Sometimes it is just two people who, through a strange twist of fate, your Malcolm and Denise kind of just end up working together by default. So it's that kind of situation. They usually are pretty true blue and strong throughout the entire game. You know that they're a couple. They may not be a power couple, but they're a couple, and they're going to stick together through thick or thin. But it's something that they're kind of like forced into, and we're going to skip the beta right now, because typically when you reveal the beta, the alpha becomes obvious, so we want to keep the suspense building. So we're going to skip that spot here, but know that this is where the second half of that marriage resides.
Right, and last season it was Brad and Sierra, Sierra being the beta part of the marriage of convenience.
Yeah, and we had a lot of debate there as to whether she was really the alpha and he was. I think it bore out that it was more Brad than her, even though perhaps in my opinion she's the better player, but you know, that's just the way things rolled out.
Yeah, I had a great chat with Brad Culpepper last week.
I missed it though. I mean, I have to give
Brad
props
and
to
Monica.
Yes. I didn't hear it yet. It's in my feed. I will get to it, because, you know, anyone who's going to let their kid go to Syracuse is OK in my book.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a quarterback. Rex Culpepper. Be on the lookout. Yeah. OK. All right. So, AJ, number six is the idiot savant. Does not mean this person is an idiot.
Quite the contrary. It just means that in terms of playing the game, the decisions they make aren't always necessarily the best decisions. It's always that everyone seems to be one step ahead of this person, perhaps, or, you know, there's something about the decisions that everyone at home even perhaps might be scratching their heads. Or you look at the person, you go, how are they still here? They're really, something's not connecting, but they are. And you got to give full props to this person for lasting as long as they had, maybe even digging their way out of a situation that you thought, their first boot, and suddenly they're still here. And you go back and how did that work? It was probably more luck than anything else.
So do we have a person this season that fits that billing?
You know, we don't have a pure person who hits this billing. I think this is probably the shakiest one of the bunch. However, I would say that Dr. Mike, for me, is probably the person who fits this situation. I think he thinks he's playing a much better game than he is, which is kind of part of it. I think he very well would have been long gone had Soko gone through a couple of tribals. I think that was... Indeed. I just don't really see him being a long-term person for this game. I think a situation might drag him along towards the end there, but Ty was kind of someone who, like, also was one of these people who, like, likable, does some things you like, but then when it comes down to actually making decisions, I don't think I side with him on most of his calls.
I don't know, AJ, I'm sort of bullish on Dr. Mike at this point. Like, I think that idiot savant, you know, that is fine for the call. But just in terms of where we are right now, that, you know, we're five episodes in. He has an idol. The merge is around the corner. If he didn't get voted off pre-merge, like, he just screams to me. As somebody who is, you know, probably, you know, pencil him in for the final five, because well, who's coming for him then?
Oh, well, no, I agree with you. That's why the idiot savant is so high up on the list, is because, you know, they're generally speaking, the other players in the game also are going to see him as someone who isn't as big a threat. You know, one of the advantages of being considered someone who is the obvious first boot within your tribe, when you don't go to tribal and you survive that and kind of start to endear yourself to the rest of the tribe enough for these swaps, and when numbers are important, you know, they're going to keep you around. And I think not being a threat early, you know, it becomes a benefit, as opposed to being that, oh, we got to get rid of this guy, he just doesn't fit in. So, you know, if you can survive that first boot, but I don't think he's done a lot in terms of strategy.
I don't think he's been to tribal council yet.
Well, no, he hasn't. But what I'm saying is that the even his interactions within the tribe, I don't quite see that it's clicking in the same way it is for me. I just, there's something off there for me.
Yeah. I mean, I just think he's set up really well in terms of that he has the idol. If they get to the merge, even if the healers start getting picked off, like, he'll be the last one that they try to go for after some of these people like Joe and Cole. And I think he'd probably even go behind like a Jessica. So I think that, you know, he's set up, I think, to have some longevity here.
No, absolutely. I agree with you. I mean, you know, we have him ranked in the number six spot, which, you know, if things went according to, you know, quote unquote plan, I mean, it's not really that way, because usually you're going to drag an injured fresh meat along as the third person for that final tribal kind of situation, who's not going to get any votes. But, you know, this is the sixth spot. So I agree with you. The idiot savant always has a lot of upside. And if for some reason that, you know, I'm wrong, and quite frankly, I usually am. But, you know, if he suddenly starts to get into a position where he can start to maneuver and have some tribals and start to figure things out, I think certainly he's got the intelligence to shoot way up on the list. I don't know that he'll have the chance.
Let's go to number five on the list. This is Captain Loophole, the person that knows all of the angles, AJ.
Yep. So usually a super fan, usually someone who just knows the game inside and out. You know, if there's a twist, they've thought about it. They've probably proposed it and written into to Jeff Probst in the past and said, hey, do this challenge. It's great. You know, but this is someone who really knows the ins and outs of the game, isn't going to be surprised by anything, and just uses, you know, rolls with the punches and hopes that the knowledge of the game will overcome any physical shortcomings or perhaps any awkwardness in the social game.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, there's only one person who really fits this year. I mean, you know, you might as well just slap a turtleneck on him and call him Cochran. But
yeah. Okay.
It's Ryan.
Ryan.
Easily Ryan. He just even just from the get-go, when he's able to pull Devin in by sharing his information, for picking the right person to give the idol to, the no longer in existence idol, but, you know, and then having the wherewithal to follow through and say, hey, I gave it to you, and then, you know, let's work together. I think he knows this game inside and out, and he's not going to be surprised by anything. He's not going to get blindsided by people, but in terms of any twists that the game are going to throw his way, I think he's got this on lockdown, and that becomes an asset, especially when you start surrounding yourself with people who perhaps aren't as familiar with what's going on in a full new player season.
Now, did you agree with the move he made at this past tribal council to swing away from Allie and to the Chrissy side to vote out Rourke?
You know, I have to say, I heard your flip flop on it.
Yes.
And your back and forth. I will say I haven't given a lot of thought since the episode, but watching it real time, I didn't understand the move. And again, I'm not out there thinking about it, to, you know, 24/7 like he is. And I don't really know entirely that we've seen exactly what his relationship is with Chrissy and how strong it is. I'm sure that factors into it. I on face value, given on what we saw, I certainly said, well, look, why are you worrying about what Chrissy is going to think about you when she's not going to the jury if you vote her out and she's gone? Like, why are you worried about that? Whereas Allie's still here. to me, that made the decision pretty easy. So I didn't understand the flip for that sense. But at the same time, I understand that, you know, he's much more able to play both sides here by keeping her around. So it wasn't like, oh, my gosh, you idiot, what are you doing? But for me, I didn't see what tipped the scales in that direction other than the coolness factor of being able to, you know, use that as a bargaining chip way down the line, saying, and I bonded with her over this thing. You know, you can't really argue that if she's not in jury asking you the question about it. So I see it long view, but in the short term, I did not really think he made the right choice. But yeah. I'm willing to admit that I could be very wrong here because I don't know the extent of their relationship.
Yeah, I think really we will have a clearer picture of this, you know, when we get through a few more weeks of the season and then are able to like point back to this as being like one of the real inflection points of Survivor 35, of what would have happened if Ryan would have gone the other way based on, you know, is Chrissy going to ever turn around and betray him? You know, what goes on with that day one advantage that she has and what he ultimately decides to do with the rest of the game. So this is going to be a fun conversation to revisit as we go through this.
Yeah, I think we found our fulcrum point of the season. I think this is definitely the spot where Ryan's fate is going to turn on this call. You know, but you know, if in 10 minutes into this episode he's already hugging Allie and it's water under the bridge, then you know he absolutely made the right call.
Yeah.
So this could be much ado about nothing.
And where I ultimately came down on this was that ultimately Allie's going to have to, you know, if not like it, accept it, or she's going to be the next person out.
Yeah, exactly. I just will say, in just in terms of the whole framework of this season, I love the fact that Survivor is throwing in these short-term immunities and these short-term advantages and forcing them to be used or not, you know, but, you know, there's a time limit on them. I think that was the right way to go. I've got a lot of ideas that I haven't had a chance to propose when you've done your forms at the end of the season. It's the type of new twists I'd like to see, but definitely, I think they do so much better job of coming up with these than that other show on CBS. And the Scorpion. I mean, you know, you can't just take someone from Smash and just bring them right into a new show. No, it's just, for me, this has been a great season. I know a lot of people think, I've heard a lot of people say that it's slow to get going and everything, but I love the fact that the interference from production is not there in this show. Things may not be used in the way that the production might have meant for them to be used, and that's not their fault. But these new twists are not broken, and that's what I like about them.
Okay, AJ, the X Factor. We have no returning players here this season. This is the one person who's not like everybody else. Who is this season's X Factor in your mind?
Yeah, we haven't had anyone who, had to be medevaced from the game, yet we was allowed to stay Christmas. But,
it would have been Christmas. What is going to be the X Factor? Not Paul?
No, not Paul, because Paul would have been the mad scientist.
Yeah, he would have had too many different things going on. Everybody's marriage of convenience alpha.
Exactly. Exactly. Chris was the one who was on one leg. I think for this one, it was more so the case at the beginning of the game. It was very clear that Lauren was different from everybody else in Yawa. She did not fit in. She was an outcast. And now she didn't even change tribes. She's in there still in Yawa, which also pretty much makes her different from anyone who's left in the game. She did not change tribe. She's the only one. Other than Ashley, who stayed on Lebo. But, you know, she is an outsider. She doesn't fit in. It's clear she's a square peg in a round hole. And she is, for me, the only one of these people who I would say doesn't have any natural connection with anyone else. And it shows in the way that she's not been able to really forge any social connections with anybody. She's definitely the one who's not like the others.
So earlier in the season, she described herself as, I feel like I'm like the teacher and all these other people here are like the students at the high school. So, yeah, I think that that's actually a good fit for her, the X Factor. Do you think that she is establishing a relationship with Ben during their time together?
Yeah, I think.
Which Steven infamously poo-pooed that thought.
I think she can, and she probably is making some inroads there. It might be too little too late, but I also think that if we had waited one more week to do this podcast, perhaps we would have said, you know what, they seem more like the marriage of convenience than anything else. If suddenly this week a bond is formed between them, and it seems like because Ben is so loyal, you know, once he says, yeah, I'm with you, you know, if circumstances make it so that he turns to her and says, yeah, you know, the two of us do have to stick together, I think that could be something that is beneficial to both of them. Yeah, I don't necessarily think that she's got the ability to win out on her own, because again, the social awkwardness for her is clearly there. She doesn't know how to connect to these particular people. In a different season, I think she'd be fine. I just, you know, when you're 10 years older than everybody else on your initial tribe, it's not easy to fit in. And I think it puts you in a certain mental state that it's going to be hard for her to shake it unless she makes the merge. And at that point, maybe, you know, she gets a little more self-confidence.
All right, AJ, number three is the mad scientist. Do you have a mad scientist left on the board?
Yeah, I think a mad scientist is someone, you know, a lot of times the mad scientist is just someone who is a Tony type, who is always trying to scheme, can't let well enough alone. But a mad scientist isn't always that. Sometimes the mad scientist is simply someone who is there to buck the status quo, to really, they have a plan and no one's going to tell them what to do. And they're going to do whatever they can to manipulate the other people to do it their way. They're never going to give up their original idea. So in that sense, I think Chrissy is definitely the mad scientist this season. I think that she has certainly in her confessional and her whole attack of the whole situation last week was definitely manipulative and was, you know, didn't sit in tribal council and let the attacks just come. She was always there with an attack back and to kind of trying to spin it back on work. So I think she did a really good job of showing that she's thinking about everything. And I do think that when the merge hits, I don't think anyone here can really tell us who she's going to go with. I think she could go in so many different directions, and I think she could be one of these people who does the, the jump around to these, you know, trust clusters, if we're going to still call them that. Please not. Mm-hmm. Please not. But, you know, I think she's the type of person who's not going to be afraid to swing, like a Tony did, to just say, no, I'm voting with them, but I'm still with you. It was just this one time. I think she's definitely got that personality, and I think she's showcased that already. And I'm intrigued by her in a way that I haven't been intrigued by a lot of the past seasons mad scientists, because it is in a package that isn't necessarily obvious that she's doing it.
Well, with this fake idol in her pocket, that it would be very exciting to see in the hands of a mad scientist. I think that that is the type of person you would like to see have an advantage like this.
Yeah, and the other thing about it is that she also is smart enough to know that she can't use it right now because Ryan's in her tribe. I mean, you know, what you can say, this is a real idol. He's like, no, it's not. So she couldn't use it in a way to, use against Ryan, because of course Ryan knows about it. So, I think it'd be interesting to see what happens once we either merge, or if there's another swap or whatever it is, like when things get mixed up again, or if Ryan gets voted out, and suddenly she has it and no one knows about it. You know, I think it'd be interesting.
She also was the extra mad scientist when she was dealing with Rourke.
I'm not smarting, Miss Smarty Pants.
Really mad.
The angry scientist. Yeah, no, I thought it was great the way they went at
you
each other.
Like
I thought
me when I'm mad. Yeah.
No, Mr. McGee.
Okay. All right, AJ, number two is the second half of The Marriage of Convenience. This is the alpha. Is it time to reveal The Marriage of Convenience?
I think you know it is. And, well, let's face it. After we saw this past episode here and all the shenanigans that were going on where you had, you know, Joe and he was like, you know, really upset with them. And, you know, he's going to use his immunity and Desi's going to be mad with him and everything. And like, who's left on the tribe? Who is left after Alan goes? It's Ashley and it is Devin. And the two of them are now forced to kind of rely on each other. And they've kind of said it, you know, they've had the discussion. So, you know, I think we need to work together because otherwise
we're beach people.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think they are clearly going forward, assuming they don't have to, you know, draw rocks or anything like that and suddenly end up with one of them getting booted. I think they have forged a bond here that is going to be a little bit stronger than any pre-existing tribal relationships going forward because they have a common enemy and they need to stick together to survive.
AJ, that's like you and I, that our bond based on time at the beach.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You and I are never going to turn on each other. Never, ever, ever going to turn on each other. What's that, Steve? No, I'll tell him later.
Who's that, Fishmac?
No, nothing at all. Nothing at all. I'll listen to the poetry later. No, it's fine.
Okay. Now, I guess the question for me is going to be, who is the beta and who is the alpha in this arrangement?
Yeah, and I think it's definitely an argument could be made for either one. But just based on what I've seen thus far, I do think Devin's the smarter player. I think Devin is going to be the one who's going to steer her towards getting back together with Ryan at some point so that, you know, he's in charge of a threesome in which he has two.
Wow.
I think her kind of, you know, her inability to keep a poker face sort of is going to make her reluctant to take a lead in any situation. So I think he's going to steer the ship. She needs him more than he needs her, I think, is what it boils down to. And therefore, that gives him the power of the alpha. Though I do think in a vacuum, I think she's probably the better player. Mm-hmm. I just think that she's in a situation now where she needs him more than he needs her.
Yeah. She seems certainly to be the more assertive player than Devin, but that's also the kind of thing that could make her more of a target. I think the interesting wrinkle here is that the narcissist, JP, is still in the game. And how do those two things reconcile themselves if and when all these players get to the merge?
Well, that's what's so great about this season is that you have really strong relationships that were established on the original tribes. And then once you have the shakeup, suddenly you have these new strong relationships in addition to the marriage of convenience here. You know, you have the Ryan and Chrissy kind of bond because that seemed to be a very honest bond. It didn't seem to be a gameplay bond when he said, you know, I gave it to you because, you know, I really respect you and I wanted to work with you. I think they both were being honest there. And so that becomes a stronger bond perhaps than just, hey, we ended up both wearing the same color at the beginning of the game. So there's a lot of that. And then, you know, this kind of, oh, I really like him and we're attracted to each other and now we're separated. And oh, he's kind of cute too. And like, you know, where does that fall into the thing? So this has been a very interesting season in that regard.
Okay. All right, AJ, that only leaves one spot left here in the archetypes. That would be the diplomat. There's only one person left. Let's hear about Allie, the diplomat.
Allie, the diplomat. I think Allie showcased how much of a diplomat she is simply by the fact that whereas Chrissy was unable to forge a relationship or even talk to work, Allie was pretty much already brought her into her alliance and said, I'm voting with you. You know, it was one of these things where I think she's very able to talk to anybody. You know, everybody was on the original Yawa was anti-Patrick. And yes, we all know that perhaps she had more of a pre-existing relationship with him than anyone else. But she was still able to keep that relationship going while also not committing it to the point where people were like, they're a couple. You know, I think she's done a really good job of talking to everybody that she's encountered in the game and making them at least feel comfortable with her, if not even, like I said, being able to bring them into the fold. And how she handles Ryan when they get back to camp, and, you know, if she's able to kind of express her anger, yet at the same time smooth it over, but, you know, and not make herself a target, I think we'll have seen proof positive that she's a good diplomat as opposed to just an okay diplomat.
She's in a tough spot right now based on how things unfolded for her last week. You know, definitely not drawing dead or anything like that after last week's tribal council, but she is going to have to be her best diplomat yet to be able to bounce back from this.
Yeah, and I think she will. I honestly think that this is going to be another one of those situations where she's going to, in confessional, tell us how angry she is. And yeah, she's going to scream a little bit because you kind of have to, because you have to stick up for yourself in that situation. But I think she's smart enough and self-aware enough to know that past the initial shock of it, which everyone's going to understand why she's angry, she needs to let it go, because otherwise she is the next to go. And I think she'll get that. And I think she'll do it in a way that perhaps even brings Chrissy into her mix, so that maybe she could even wrest control of Chrissy from Ryan in that kind of which one of the two of us is really in a stronger position here.
AJ, those are our 13 archetypes for Survivor 35. Just to push the reset button on everything, Fresh Meat was Cole, the Ninja was Desi, the Cheerleader was Jessica, our Loose Cannon was Joe, the Narcissist is JP, Old Reliable is Ben Dreebergen, the Marriage of Convenience is two parts, the Beta is Ashley, the Alpha is Devin, Idiot Savant is Dr. Mike, Captain Loophole is Ryan, the X Factor is Lauren, the Mad Scientist is Chrissy, and our diplomat is Allie.
Yep, that's how it breaks out for me. You know, these are my rankings. These are my assignments. So although you may disagree with me, I'm certainly not wrong.
Yeah, I mean, nothing jumps out to me as, oh, my God, what are you thinking here with this? I could definitely, you know, we could do some switcheroo on some things, but there's nothing
Absolutely.
That I think is egregious here.
Yeah, and again, this doesn't mean that Allie is going to win the game, but she's in a lot better position than someone like Cole. And I think just by watching this show, I think we can all agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. AJ, now this is the part where we do our draft and try to figure out where things are. Now, this is just a fun exercise to be able to, like, really heading into the merge, you know, where people stand and what our predictions are based on what we've seen in the pre-merge part of the game. We have, I'm sure somebody did track down what our draft scores were for last season. I don't have that information in front of me right now.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm pretty sure you won, but you know, a lot of times in this situation, it comes down to a 10-0 vote at the end or mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah.
And that usually really makes it seem a lot further apart for either of us when we've won than it normally would have been. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt. We certainly do.
Yeah. Tell me, does this sound right? Did Officer Sarah go undrafted in our draft last season?
She very well might have.
All right. So again, we're don't hold us anything. I'm sure someone will who has tracked this will let us know on Twitter what the results of last season's draft were.
Yeah, you know what? It's all for grins.
Yeah,
all
and hopefully not D Schoolish keeping the score on this. Okay. All right, AJ. So with our people, if we will draft teams of six, snake draft, you are the guest. Presumably you lost last season, so you have the number one pick overall. We award, what, 3 points for final tribal council votes? Is that how that we make that work?
Yeah, something like that.
That's basically, and we don't get involved with too many other things in our scoring system.
If you win, an immunity, you get some points, and if you play an immunity idol, you get points. But we're not going to see how many confessionals you have or anything. We're not going that deep of a dive.
I think also you get a point if you make it to the next round.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So that, you know, the person who's voted out next doesn't get as many points as the person who lasts the whole show.
So you can potentially win even if you don't pick the winner.
You can, unless it's a 10-0 vote, which, you know, the last few seasons.
Yes. All right, but not last season. Last season was actually a close vote. Okay.
No, last season was a close vote. But, you know, you get a few 10-0s and 9-1s, and it really pretty much, if you have the winner, you win.
AJ, number one pick, where are you going?
All right. Simply because I'm going to want to root for this person the whole way. I'm just going to kick things off with Ryan. I don't think he's going to win. I think he's probably a Final Five exit. But I'm going to go with Ryan and hope that that we have a long season of fun with him.
Okay. Okay. So there you go. Ryan, number one pick off the board. You do tend to go with your heart in these drafts more than necessarily the chalk pick.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't want to pick someone that I don't want to root for. I think it's more than that. You know, it's just same thing with fantasy sports.
Like, I believe that's hashtag Brent Logic, which he did win. He did win the LFC draft this past season by taking Josh with the first pick. So it works sometimes.
Sometimes the meatball rolls in the right direction. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I have the second pick. I will take Chrissy with the second pick off the board. So at least we are matched up in terms of this day one advantage. And then by proxy, I will, even though that he could potentially be in a bad spot going into this next vote or two before the merge, I'll take Ben with the third pick.
Okay, very good, very good. All right, so from there, I am going to go, I'll take Devin.
Okay.
And I will take Allie.
Devin and Allie. Okay, all right. Jessica was my winner pick for the season. So I will, you know, stick with the person that I started at the beginning of the season. So give me Jessica. And then I will also pair her with a fellow healer. But I will go with Joe.
Joe.
Jessica.
Very good.
And Joe.
Jessica and Joe. All right. I get the next two. All right, I am going to go with...
Just to reset the board for people playing at home. Okay. People still available to draft are...
Lauren, Dr. Mike, Ashley, JP, Desi, and Cole. Or who
one will go undrafted.
Yes. Yes, indeed. All right. Well, like I said, I think he's harmless enough and could last a while. So I'm going to say Dr. Mike.
Good pick.
And... You know, assuming that she makes it through the next tribal, I'm going to go with Desi.
Okay. Dr. Mike and Desi. All right. So here's where we stand right now. We have three picks left. I have two of them. You have one. Give me Ashley. I will take her with this spot at number 10. And then I have the choice between Cole, JP, and Lauren. Just to think out loud here for a moment, Lauren, I feel like, has the best chance at longevity, whereas Cole and JP certainly seem to have more upside in terms of winning immunities and potentially maybe, you know, we've seen Cole, at least he knows the location of an idol. But let me just look at the rest of my team. Yeah, I'll go with Lauren.
Okay. Yeah, very good. You're going to make me pick between the two big men. Huh?
Yeah.
Oh, man. You know, neither one is jumping out at me as super better than the other. I both have their shortcomings, and both of them are very strong and could easily, once the, if they make the merge, you know, put on a Joey Amazing kind of run of immunities. So the one thing that I will say is that you can't fix stupid. So I'm going to go with JP.
There you go. There is JP. Cole goes undrafted, where if this does, you know, if history is any precedent, this is great
Cole's
news for
win.
Cole. This is great news for Cole. I mean, this is sort of like perfect karma. I did have Cole ranked number one going into this season in terms of my most likely to win power rankings. So now that he could taste the other side of that, like he was tasting peanut butter and jelly, that was rationed for the tribe. But who knows? You know, he could easily end up going on a run when we get to the merge.
Absolutely. And that's what's great about this show is that there are no guarantees. And
we're stupid.
Oh, yeah. No, that was the stupid I was talking about.
Yeah.
Did you think I was talking about Cole? No, I was talking about me.
No. We're dumb. Our predictions are always wrong. We didn't even get close to seeing Sarah Lucina last season. So what do we know?
Hey. You know, when it comes down to it, hashtag on my couch.
Hashtag on my couch. That's right. You're like Suri, and you're not going to get up off your couch either.
No, I am not. I may get up to get to the desk to record a Beat My Guest episode, but that's about it.
That's it. Okay. AJ, where can people listen to Beat My Guest?
You know, wherever good podcasts are streamed, yeah, you can find it on iTunes. You can find it on podbean.com, which is where I host it. But, you know, put a little type it into the search engine. Google it. It'll be there.
Yes.
But I appreciate listening. And Rob, of course, as always, you have an open invitation. Say the word, because I know you got plenty of time for other podcasts.
Yes.
But, you know, well, you know, when you have that downtime.
Yes. Well, I would be happy to do it, you know, once we get to the Survivor off season. I just, again, like I have a reputation of being like at least like somewhat, you know, at least like intellectual adjacent. And I'm very worried about, you know, completely shattering that myth.
Agreed. But I don't have nearly like
the
listenership
emperor
that you
has no clothes, AJ.
Very, very true. Very true.
That's kind of the issue there. But yeah, if you would like to have me, definitely this when we get to the Survivor off season, that definitely sounds like a plan for me.
Awesome. Okay. Awesome. You know, I won't grill you as hard as the Mets are grilling their managerial candidates heading into signing
managerial
Callaway,
so. Yeah. That or pitching coach candidates.
Talk about a long off season.
Yeah. Okay. AJ, give us your World Series prediction. We're recording this on Wednesday morning. Who's going to win game 7? This will be the first test of your predictive abilities this fall.
Sure. I think... I want to say Houston, but with Kershaw on the mound, he's probably going to throw 160 pitches, take a shutout into the ninth, and then they'll get to the bullpen and they'll score 4 on Kenley to win 4-3.
4-3. Okay, so Astros win the World Series. That's prediction number one.
Yep, prediction sure to go wrong. Number one.
Yes. And how's your fantasy team in the Rob Has a Fantasy Football League?
Not sure. I think I'm doing okay. It's a log jam. Last I checked, I know I won last week. I won all 3 of my leagues, but I've beaten Parhar twice. You know, that's not any big feat. So
yeah,
I love you, Jordan. I love you.
My fantasy football year is really a tale of two teams that I have. One team that's great in my longtime keeper league, and then in the 20 team Rob is a podcast league, it's really night and day.
Well, pretty much as I told my wife when she asked how I was doing, I said, as long as I beat Collins, I'm okay. And I beat Collins. So Jeremy went down. I haven't been cocky about it until now, but.
All right. And what's going on with Mike Bloom?
Oh, with Mike Bloom and I. Yeah, we are still doing the Hamster Factor. It is a fun podcast where we're old man AJ recommends movies for millennial Mike to watch for the first time. And then we kind of discuss them coming at different generational point of views. And we are doing this week in honor of Halloween. We are doing The Babadook. But we've done sci-fi movies. We've done teen romps. We do all sorts of genres. Check it out. The Hamster Hamster Factor, also available where podcasts are streamed.
Okay. All right. Well, great job. Of course, you can check out AJ's books on Amazon.com. Search for AJ Mass there to get any of the great AJ Mass books. And of course, you could follow AJ on Twitter at AJ Mass. AJ, always a pleasure to do this with you. And again, we'll be right back here in Survivor 36 around the corner.
Absolutely. We're going to have a good time watching the rest of this season to see how stupid we are. But as stupid as we are, we're going to be stupid enough to come back next season and do it all over again. But I wouldn't have it any other way. It's always a blast.
All right. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.